Blog Talk Radio. Coming at you. I'm feeling it. I'm fired up about the craziness, the things that's going on. This is September 2nd, 4 months out before year 2019. I started out with the Sounds of Blackness, breaking free from the indoctrination of color and all the things that's going on out here. This is an open line talk show today. I'm just going to open the lines. I don't care, you know, whatever you want to say, whatever in your heart, but I think I set the tone for the show. I'm, you know, tired of the BS. I'm happy, and I, you know, feel the spirit of some things are coming and things is coming around. Welcome to the Focus Show. The lines are open. I see you got a couple people on the lines. What's up, Leonard? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on? Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm a little bit wore out because I got my nephews up here, and I've been working all weekend doing a bunch of different things, honeydews and all that. It's kind of funny you played that song. I remember I was
which
at
song?
Fort Hood.
Which one?
Fight the Power.
Fight the Power,
By Ozzy, buddy. That song, let me tell you something. Let me tell you a good little story about that song. That song right there. I was with my dad. He was stationed at Fort Hood, and we were living in Killeen, Texas. Anybody knows that? They know what that's.
Killeen, Texas. Yeah, I know. I was stationed there.
There you go. See, so he was at Killeen. He was living in Killeen. That was 1975. And that song right there was probably one of the first songs I got my ass beat for cussing when I was little. Because that one line, I would sing along with the song. And you know, as a kid, boy, you hear something like that, you'd be like, oh, all this bullshit going. Hey, I got wore out maybe a couple of times.
Did you get fired up? Did you get a spanking?
Hey, you're not gonna see. I wasn't getting spankings back then. I was getting whooping, and I got a whooping. Dad, my father not only was a sergeant in the Army, he was a sergeant in special warfare, so he dealt with nuclear weapons. All right, and he was a black belt in karate. Dad was not no joke. So dad, like I said, dad, you know, heard me. So I said, "Uh-oh, now I'm in trouble." So I got a whooping over that song. So I had to kind of catch myself.
Well, I'm sorry to have to bring back that song to you like that and remind you of that that little tapping you got and everything, bro. But it's all good, man.
Hey, but I still like the song though. I mean, you know, it's a good song. I can say the words now. Like I say, you know, as a youngster, oh no, they was not having that, you know.
What's up, Dr. Robinson? How you doing, man? Welcome to the Focus Show.
Hello. How you doing, brother Michelle?
Well, I'm doing blessed, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm well, brother. I'm well. You know, I'm just turning into your show and listening to your conversation about the music. The music is expression, articulation of what's going on in our community, Doc. And some of the songs tell the and some of them dress it up. But the music was in a period of time. Fighting the Power. Remember Spike Lee in that movie where that was playing on that big boom box up in Harlem. With Denzel Washington, and the police would come through the neighborhood and look at the brother carrying the boom box. But they were profiling then and they're profiling down, brother.
Yes, sir. Hey, what role are you playing in this Angela project that I know that's about to take place?
I'm just going to attend the function, and you might want to tell the people about that Angela project. So it's going to be what, September 14th, right? 15th.
Right.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Steve.
I just know some of the people coming. I think one of the main people coming was going to be Jesse Jackson. So
right.
He was at Aretha Franklin's funeral, I think it was yesterday, day before yesterday.
Right.
But he's going to be one of the people there. So I think it's going to be a significant effort in the community to start voicing and articulating some of the issues that we are concerned with.
Yeah, they, you know, just out of curiosity, man, you think it's just going to be another show where it's going to be a lot of preaching, a lot of people talking? You think it really going to have any significance?
No, I think, you know, it's not. I think it's not going to be dogmatic like that. I really do think it's trying to open up people's eyes and let them see what's really going on around us and what we are involved in as African-Americans. And the rhetoric actually should be translated to some type of action. So, I mean, you got the voices that are out there, the voices that are stirring up the rhetoric, but we need to translate that. The people need to translate that to some effort for change.
You know, one of the biggest things that I'm focusing on for these last 4 months going into the new year is that I'm not no longer using the terminologies that I know terminologies I've been wrong, like African-American, Black, Negro, and the N-word. You know, I am a descendant of American slaves. And so my strategy is trying to mobilize more men. So I'm going to be going around to some of the worship facilities, some of the right here, because I'm considering Louisville's ground zero, Doc. I mean, I'm serious, making Louisville's ground zero for us, this movement, and trying to make some things happen, stir some stuff up. So, Leonard, I've already got the email address. For anybody who wants to send me their information and wants to be on board of this conversation, we're trying to put legislation together. But I got this email address saying we are one at 400 years slaves.com. Matter of fact, it's we are one at 400 years.com. We are one at 400years.com is the email that I'm using to try to get people, and I'm going to be putting that out there because, Leonard, man, this we need to mobilize these last 4 months going into 2019 to get as many people we possibly can to start talking and speaking this language and try to be on as many shows, stirring up as much as we can. What you say to that, Leonard?
One of the things that we have to realize as a people is that we are a diverse people. When I say people, I mean all the way back to our African ancestry. We are a diverse people, very diverse, most diverse in the world. And by no means are we monolithic. However, the beauty about us here in America, and even in the Caribbean, and in South America, and in the West Indies, as that we are united by one thing. We are descendants of slaves, descendants of American slaves, descendants of Caribbean slaves, descendants of South American slaves, descendants of Central American slaves. So we're descendants of slaves. What that means is we all got our ancestors, despite their differences, despite their diversity, all got here on the same boat. Okay, so we're literally still in the same boat when it comes to slavery. That is our unifying. That should be our rally cry. That should be our unifying ideology. Is the fact that we are descendants of slaves, descendants of American slaves. If you're in the Caribbean, descendants of Caribbean slaves. See, so that component right there. Going back, you know, looking at even if, like I said, as if you are an immigrant of the Caribbean, if you're an immigrant of South America, You can go back into your ancestry if you are of African descent and go back and see where you have a slave ancestor. All right. Mm-hmm. So that has to be that right there is our, you know, people all talk about, well, we need unity. It's kind of hard to have unity when you have Christians and Muslims and Moors and Nubians and Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and Crips and Bloods and Disciples and Vice Lords and Masons and Elks and all of these little subgroups, okay? So you know, we got these little subgroups and subcultures, but the thing that that unifies us all right? You know, people that call for unity, all right? Here's the challenge, okay? If you are someone who is calling for unity or complaining about there's no unity within our community, okay, so here's our rally cry. We are descendants of American slaves here in America, all right? Because if you look back in our ancestry, we have a slave ancestor, okay? Now, you, like I said, you do got some brothers and sisters that are you know, maybe one, two generations from being from the Caribbean islands or from South America, Central America. Guess what? You are a descendant of slaves too, all right? Because your ancestors came, you had an ancestor come from the Middle Passage, and you had an ancestors that were slaves from birth to death in the Caribbean islands, in Brazil, in Colombia, in Nicaragua, wherever, Honduras, wherever. Matter of fact, when I went to Isla Ruatan, which is an island right off of Nicaragua, right off of Honduras, there's an entire culture, all right, surrounding. Matter of fact, they do a dance about and a story about how the slave ships that came over, they crashed in a storm off of St. Vincent and how they escaped and how it's a beautiful story. They do a dance to it. They tell a story, the whole history, everything. See, so this is what I'm saying is this can be our point of unification right here is, you know, a lot of people, oh man, you know, the biggest thing which we have to understand, and this is, I have to attribute Nora Shelton for this, is that our slave ancestors. People think about slavery and slaves. They think about, oh, they were weak, they were defeated. No, it took a lot of strength, all right, to be a slave. Okay, a lot of people say, well, how much strength does it take? You was just getting whipped and doing what master was telling you to do. No. They were in a situation where it was either be a slave or kill yourself or die.
Right.
End your
line.
End your family. Have no future. Okay, so for them to decide, say, I'm going to live every day, and I'm going to fight back for humanity. I'm still going to love. I'm still going to have a wife. I'm still going to have children. All right? You can't whip the love out of me.
What you're talking about is that no matter what they were going through, man, no matter what they was having to deal with, they still made sure that their humanity to live was still. And this is one of the things that why I talk about, why especially Dotsie specifically focus on the 1619, between 1619 and 1776, we identify them as the first generation of slaves. Those first generation of slaves that did not get incorporated in 1776, July the 4th, they created a whole demographics of people. That's where our foundation, that's where this country gets its foundation from. Would you agree to that? Hey, Dr. White, would you agree to that? That this is where this country gets its foundation from that 1776?
Right, I would agree that that would be part of the foundation of genealogy of our of who we are, because it was that whole demographic of human beings. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, I would agree with that. That genealogy of descendancy between 1619 and 1776 are that whole demographic of people who were slaves. And so, like, I think the undermining is that the generations thereafter, they were trying to incorporate into the American system who didn't really want them and who still mistreated them. And yet they still tried, but yet giving up that foundation of their past would allow them to enter into this acculturation thing. But you can never forget all of those people from 1619 up until 1776.
Yeah, Doc, what you just said there is the foundation of what Dossie language, Dossie wisdom, Dossie understanding, even now with us creating this relationship with descendants of American slaves for economic social justice. The foundation of what we're talking about is that the slaves were the economic foundation of America between 1619 and 1776. And what you just said, for us to America wanted us to not even, the European dominant culture didn't even want us to acknowledge or connect with the first generation of people that was between 1619 and 1776, because then we would understand our investment in this country. See, the moment that they stop allowing us, the moment that we stop, and the moment that Martin Luther King was talking about coming to get my check, the moment we started thinking just like the European culture based on our economic stronghold we had in this country, is the moment that they started realizing that we was getting too smart. You said something that, Doc, is right on point.
Oh, yeah. The thing, Brother Mashon, the key word, operational word for me is economics.
Yes.
Because when they freed the slaves, they freed them slaves, but those slaves had nowhere to go. They had no land. They had no education. They had no wherewithal. So that left a whole generation in rag and tag fashion. So that was by design. They built the bank on our backs economically, established a platform for capitalism, and then they left us broke and thrown over. So that's why Dr. King probably said, we coming to get our check. So anytime you talk about like reparations, et cetera, they say that the bank is bankrupt. But what about our first demographic, that first wave of people who are dehumanized to build their capitalist system?
And, you know, and that's the conversation. This is where I've been posting. Leonard, I'm getting very, I mean, Mark is on the line, and I see my sister on the line. Listen up, man. And I'm getting very, very agitated, but very, very focused on a few things that I'm starting to realize. Our men need to pull, excuse my friends, my wife done went upstairs, and I'm going to tell you, like, our men, our cultural men, those born male to becoming men, need to pull their head out their ass and start realizing that we have a social economic responsibility to speaking, articulating in ways, get out the emotionism, but talking in such a way and articulating in such a way that this is what I do in the medical field. All my European American friends and males know that I speak and communicate in such a way to make them understand that I understand that I'm a child or children, I'm a descendant of people who lost their stolen economic stronghold or investment in this country, and we're coming to get that. We need to start talking that way, Leonard. You see where I'm going with that? We need to start all that emotionalism and all that stuff and calling ourselves this, that, and other. We need to speak the language that this country understands. And you always say language means something in this country. Would you agree to that, Leonard?
I would agree. Like I said, it's when we talk about what this nation owes us economically, I think we talk about it from a moral point of view instead of from a legal point of view. We have to look at it because we have to look at it from a legal standpoint because, you know, morally, that's like depending on the benevolence of those who, you know, either want to forget about, you know,
to
our
see
ancestors
it,
were
right.
Slaves, or just want to just say, oh, well, you know, I had nothing to do with that. So you guys, you know, a lot of people don't have the perspective or understand how, you know, because they lack the perspective, how could you be in this situation when other immigrants, because no other immigrant had to deal with what we had to deal. We are uniquely American in the sense that, like you said, is that America has built its foundation, economic foundation, on the labor, the free forced labor of our ancestors, and we got nothing in return. That is injustice. Okay, we are still living out the injustice of not having the same opportunities as immigrants. Like I said, is the immigrants have an old country they come from. A lot of, often they could, you know, get supplies back, get, you know, help from the old country or whatever.
They get naturalization
exactly.
Coming to America. We didn't, our culture
exactly.
People didn't have naturalization. Yeah.
We didn't have that. We didn't come from an old country. A lot of people say, well, we're from Africa. Yeah, okay, genetically, all right, genetically we are African, okay? But culturally, all right, we are not. Culturally, we were born right here in America. Okay, culturally, we were born in America. Culturally, we had to come up from slavery, okay, because there were some remnants of African culture that we remember, but it wasn't until we actually started to get educated and were able to go back to Africa and start looking at African culture and start learning about that aspect of the diaspora that we were able to truly understand. I mean, some things were passed on, but for most of us that were slaves, you think about a slave, all right, first, number one, the first slaves that came over were teenagers, okay? You know, 16, 17, 13, 14 years old. Okay, they were just entering into the maturation or the rites of passage of their tribes or
villages. Right, if you use the movie Roots,
yeah,
that's what you're talking about. If you use the movie Roots,
yeah,
Kunta Kinte was a teenager. Yeah. He's a kid.
And then some of them were already slaves, okay,
right,
in Africa. We're the second generation of slaves.
Yes,
see,
sir.
So what you have is you have a cultural disconnect there, okay, that you know, and you know, even as a slave in Africa, you're in a culture, an African culture, all right, of whatever tribe, whatever area, whatever, you know, there's language, there's the language of the indigenous people and the language of the conquering people. All right, so you had that, all right? But when we got here, once we were born in America, after about the third generation, okay, there was really no African left. There was just, you were a slave now. And you needed to learn,
right. Yeah.
You needed to learn how to survive, all right? As you know, it was all about survival. Do this, do that. Learn how to deal with this. Learn how to deal with that. You know, if you
had, my wife and I just looked at the movie called Drum. Okay, this
Drum,
old
19.
Mm-hmm. We just sat down and watched this movie. I mean, it's not all factual. It depicts the struggle that they went through trying to overcome. And they didn't have no connections to Africa. The only thing they understood is that they needed to learn how to survive in this land. And the only people that their predatorial person that they had to defeat was the white man. That's all they knew. They didn't know about nothing else. That's all they knew.
Exactly. Another good movie to watch, which was banned in America for a long time that you can watch now, is Goodbye, Uncle Tom.
Goodbye, Uncle Tom. Look that up.
That shows it shows the entire Middle Passage process, everything.
You say Goodbye, Uncle Tom.
Goodbye, Uncle Tom. You have to look that up. That's another good one.
Hey, Queen, welcome to the Focus Show, girl. How you doing?
I'm fine. I apologize for being late once again, but I had to take care of Doc's business, and I was actually on the phone with our president, Marcus. So forgive my tardiness, but I'm doing well today.
I both got off the line here because he's on the – what's up, Marcus? You here too. What's up, bro? Marcus? Marcus must got us on mute and everything.
Yeah, he probably does.
Hey, I saw that you had some conversations. We can't meet after the show because I got some other things I got to do. But are we in a good place, Mr. President and Ms. Queen? Did we get things squared away?
Yes, we did, and we are in a very good place. We're standing on our square as descendants of American Slaves Foundation, and that's what it is, and we're going to let other people pursue their efforts in peace, and we're going to do what we're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the gist of that. But if I may, I wanted to speak on what you all were talking about, because I think it's a very integral part to what DOS has to be about. And in the creation of the model of DOS, a key part of that is education. And
right.
Even though you have it out there, Michonne, we got to unlearn to relearn. But unlearning and relearning is an educational process. And I think that how as I was writing the model for Descendants of American Slaves Foundation, what came to my mind was how the chapters of the Black Panthers for Self-Defense actually began. And they began with education, and then they began teaching those people who signed up to become actual members, and they started teaching their 10-point program. So you were not officially a Black Panther until you completed that program to indoctrinate you into the Panthers, and you understood what the Panthers were about. And in that process, they received education. They received education about government, you know, the five levels of government. They received education on the law. So that law that governed California and Oakland and Sacramento and those things like that on what they could do in terms of self-defense. In following that historical organization and being a part of the new Black Panther Party for self-sufficiency is what we have to do as descendants of American slaves. We can't just bring people in and just say, join us. We have to be able to offer up education and economic education, understanding our contribution to this country and making people understand, all people, making them understand that America and its capitalist system was actually built on our backs, and how we have much as of a right, if not more so, than people who are currently at the beneficial end of this economic system. We have a right to economic fairness and economic awareness to benefit our people. And I heard you say that the men need to get their heads out of their behind and things of that nature. And you know, I'm the mother. I'm the nurturing one. They can't do that if they're not reeducated. And you have to understand that some of us have traveled abroad. Some of us have became second string black history historians, that's what they call them. And we have to look at the masses, and the masses of us that are actually descendants of American slaves are so uneducated and so disconnected from our history. Not only our true history and our sojourn from Africa to America, but when you talk about the economic history, you know, people got a general understanding that, yeah, we pick cotton for free, you know, that we slave for free. But they don't know the full scope of the benefit of our works and how that actually funded a nation, not just the slave states. It funded a nation. some people don't even know that it was slaves that built the White House itself. So it's these things that we have to educate on and spread the word of that education in order for people to have a better connection to our economic system and our economic rights.
You are, okay, go ahead, bro. Go ahead, Brother Robinson.
Okay, I agree with my sister.
Queen.
I think that, Queen. I believe that the edification of our people will come through education. And education,
yes, sir,
if we do it right, will create the transformation. Because we have to understand that the only time our people are educated, really, and it's about achievement, is on Black History Month. They give Black people or descendants of American slaves 30 days. No. We have
28.
This thing goes all the way back to, like you said, that first foundation. When that first slave ship came, they knew what they were doing, okay? And so that's why we have a wealth gap now. It's not that our people don't want to work. It's not that they can't find jobs. It's just that this whole thing is by design. So any edification of our people through education on a community level, we take back, we educate our own people with the truth and give them knowledge, which can bring life, and then we can build a great foundation for transformation.
Hey,
yes,
listen
sir.
Up. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go here because I've had to deal with this a little. I had to deal with this a little early. So y'all, you're bringing up something that I'm going to have to address it. And, hopefully I get it out in the right way and everything. But, I called into a radio station Saturday, all right? And I acknowledge that September the 1st, and I was telling to a religious Christian, supposed a Christian radio station, that 2019 is going to be very significant in marking 400 years of slavery. Okay, so I'm saying that listen, for the next 4 months going out into the new year, we're going to be focusing on this and everything. Let me tell you what happened. And I'm going to try to hold it together because this individual, I had to get with him because he called me and everything. But this person is going to call a 70-year-old gentleman that literally prior to this I had a lot of respect for and I would never, and I thought he knew me better than this and everything. But he's going to call behind me and call out my name and speak on the saying that the relevance of talking about Africa and speaking about 400 years of slavery and everything is totally insignificant. I don't want to hear about that. We tired of talking about that, bro. Listen, I'm just gonna tell you something, man. He gonna say that we need to build on our education. We've been building on education, and we need to learn what we need to learn about who we are and everything. And going talking about Africa, talking about slavery is an insignificant conversation, bro. It is good that I wasn't right there next to him, okay? But then I called him because I was hurt that he would even call my name and to imply that I was, I wasn't bright. And basically, if you would have heard him, I wasn't bright enough or I wasn't in tune enough. I didn't know what I was talking about. And he's tired of us. Young people don't understand what's going on and we don't need to be going back, bro. Yes, I called him. My wife said, why did you call him? Oh, I had to call him. Okay, I had to call him, all right? And Doc, I don't mind. I'm going to call his name Strong. You probably heard his name, Dr. Robinson Strong. You heard Strong before, right?
No, that's the name for me, man. Strong.
You ain't? But he's a 70-year-old brother that got a lot of people who listen to him and everything, and he called and said his nonsense. Well, I called him at home, and I want to say this right now in his ear, and I checked him. I said, you know what, sir? Prior to you calling out my name and making light of me speaking of the descendants of American slaves, and you heard me speak about Mr. Norris Shelton is going to go down in history as a person that wrote America's Little Black Book in this city. And I said that this city is the ground zero of change across the world, okay, across this nation. And you call behind me and make light of me like I'm some, you know, insignificant Yahoo. I said Yahoo, like don't know what I'm talking about. I said prior to this, Mr. Strong, I had nothing but a lot of respect for you because you're my elder. I said, but let me check you real quick, right now. I said, you remember that Marcus Garvey nonsense we talked about? You know, that nonsense about we got to get the most educated individuals, the most educated people who need to go and get the education and everything, and then those most educated people going to top down and bring it back to us and everything. Well, you know what? What we found out that they sold us out, okay? They sold us out because what we're finding out from a bottom-up grassroots movement is that it takes the foundation of those who building a perimeter around their people and everything, and they pick the warriors that come from out of the foundation and everything, and they go up with the knowledge of who they are because the identity and everything where they're coming from comes from the bottom up and not the top down. I said, the fact that you would even insult me is to make you speak. You don't even know me and understand or appreciate that I'm a bottom-up soldier, man. I'm coming from the bottom up. I'm done with that top-down mentality that has not served us at all. This movement, and Leonard, I need you to speak to this on this, man. We are a bottom-up movement. This ain't a top-down. This is a bottom-up movement, and we got to check these so-called older, educated academia. Not. I ain't saying nothing to you, Doc. I'm mad at you, Doc. I'm just saying what I'm saying. That this bottom-up movement that the Dossie is about, we're not doing the top-down anymore. The top-down is going to have to meet us in the middle. But we need to do some bottom-up. Speak to that, Leonard, please, because that's the only way. Sounds of Blackness, breaking free. Indoctrination, breaking free from the indoctrination that we've been bred into, that's the only way we're going to be able to do it, is that we got to stop the top down coming on thinking that they know so much, but they have proven they're not to be able to be worthy to be trusted. Can you speak to that, Leonard, please?
Is he on?
I got I'm here. Leonard?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I was on mute. I'm sorry. No, I'm going to say I'm going to use two examples. We're going to use Dr. King. We're going to use Brother Malcolm X. Dr. King, highly educated, okay? He was a doctor, okay? So highly educated, went to all the colleges. But who did Dr. King come and see? He did not. The top down was not his strategy because he knew the masses of people were the ones who were hurting. He knew that that's where the power was, in the people, okay? And you can give a little bit of credit to Bayard Rustin for some of the strategies as far as mobilizing people. Now let's talk about Brother Malcolm. Brother Malcolm X, not educated at all, educated in prison, educated by the Nation of Islam, okay? Very smart brother. So here's a person who was not an academic, who was going to colleges, all right, speaking about the plight of the Negro in America at that time, and they both had the power of the people. So this top down, that's like trickle down type, you know, that's a European strategy, plain and simple. All right, you got these. If these people are talking black consciousness, black this, black that, and using a top down elitist black type of strategy to mobilize people, not gonna happen. Hasn't happened yet. Look at what has happened to all of our elders now who were at one time the faces of the movement and everything. Look at what's happening now. People want results. You got these people giving speeches and doing this and doing that, and you see, oh yeah, they did, but yet and still the people are still in the same position. Nothing has happened. No results. So this is why a bottom up strategy is a better strategy, because now not only, all right, you also need some of the people, you know, at the top to say, or some of the elite, okay, as we're going to say, to be able to get behind the masses, but it takes the masses first, okay? Once you build an army, okay, it takes the masses. The generals and the colonels and the lieutenant colonels and the commanders don't go and fight the army. It's the soldiers that fight the army, all right? And the soldiers,
hey, now,
that's your truth.
Yeah. That leads me to Marcus. That leads me to Marcus. Marcus, understand. Marcus has always said, when I first initially brought him into this conversation and I talked to him about the descendants of American slaves, he always said, I never forget, every time Marcus said, me, Sean, the only way this thing going to work is that we got to create a movement. Marcus, you know, you are there, man. Are you finally there, man? Can you speak to that, why you said that? That was so important. Marcus.
Hey, Michonne.
Yes.
I'm in the middle of a conversation with the police officer here about another thing. It's gonna be just a minute before I can come back on. I'll come back to it as soon as I can, but I need to take care of this in front of me.
Okay, good, it's no problem. Queen, all right. Queen, want to speak to that, because that has been our biggest fight that nobody really understands, you know, and I'm just gonna say this, you know, because the reason why I'm going to do that, we're going to do part three. I'm going to do part three for next week. Part three, Sounds of Blackness, breaking free from the indoctrination. We're going to keep this conversation up. But I want you to speak to it, because that's what we basically, when nobody knows, that's what we're battling right now. We're battling the so-called top-down, as great as good work that the top-down has done in the economic center of economic social justice, love it. But it's not being able to get to the masses, because you're not identified the masses of people who need to understand it to bring it up. And so right now we still in that battle where we got the top down trying to influence the bottom up and trying to tell us that we need to, you know, get the more affluent, the more articulate, the more this and that, and get them involved and everything before we get the masses. And I just want to thank you, Queen. You know, us guys, you know, we buck, you know, men buck with other men. But it is beautiful once we have brought you onto this conversation, how you have seemed to be the, I'm going to say it like this. You've seemed to be the cream between the two Oreos. You like that? Lord, I brought them. but that's what you are, the cream.
Well,
that's in between and it's brought us together and everything, because you appreciate, because you're a mother, you understand the importance of nurturing from the bottom up. You ain't gonna treat your child who's so posy, so elegant and so academic and that better than your child that is just coming up and just getting. You're gonna treat them equally the same, but you're gonna probably show the one that's probably not so bright, not so that, you're gonna show them a little bit more love and make sure they understand what you're giving them and everything. And I think that's why we need this mother nurturing and helping this movement and everything. So really talk about why this bottom-up conversation will help us break the indoctrination that we've been suffering with. Go ahead, Queen.
Well, I think it's the part of first Negro on my block syndrome. And a lot of people praise our so-called African-American, descendant of American slaves, whatever you want to call them, leaders, because we admire their education. We admire their eloquence. We admire their popularity. And what America has set the culture for is to be entertained, to be look good, to be able to articulate and enunciate and pronunciate very well, and not have the ability to meet people where they are. Is not sufficient for a movement. So with DOS, what we do is that we meet people where they are and elevate them to a place where we all need to be, and that is a part of a movement. You can't mobilize people without education. What this country has done politically, the Democrats and the Republicans have raped our people. They have taken advantage of them. They've taken advantage of their voting power. People are voting for legislation and policy that they know nothing about, legislation and policy that they have not been educated on. They're voting people based on popularity and how they look and how good they smell and all these kind of things. And none of these people have actually come into the communities and put any efforts towards educating and providing resources to the grassroots people. And we are the masses. You're only speaking to the 2% of us or the 1% of us when you talk about the educated and the elite. But the educated and the elite, if you group them all together in a room, they can't make a movement. So it is the people that make a movement. And if you're not willing to invest in people, then you have immediately become a part of the problem because we are powerful as a people. We are powerful economically. We are powerful in mobilization. Hey, I bear witness. I took 10,000 men to Washington, D.C. for the Million Man March, and these were men that all we had to say was atonement and reconciliation and that we wanted to do better by each other, not try to do better by the American system. We weren't trying to do better by the president or the government or the cutest of us. We wanted to do better by each other. And once we passed that message of love, that mobilized a people, the same people that got tired of seeing their sons and daughters die in the street, the same people that got tired of seeing people incarcerated. Because, see, sometimes the educated ones, depending on where they come from, can't have an appreciation nor an understanding to what it is to be on that grassroots level. But here I am.
Come on.
I'm educated.
Yes.
I went to Prairie View A&M University, but I come up out the mud. I come out the concrete streets of Compton, California. And so in my education, I realized that it was a blessing and that it was not something for me to hold my head up so high in the sky that I drowned in a drizzle, but it was something that I come back and offer to my community and mobilize and encourage and inspire our people to do better. And so to share that education with people who will never see the inside of a classroom, but there's an excuse for not being able to make it. So this is where DOTS comes from. This is how we move, establishing those chapters across the country, educating people, you know, and it's not about money because power will bring you more money than you ever dreamed of. But
numbers
you
and power.
Principle. You got to have a principle in which you stand on and which is unwavering and uncompromising.
Right. Now you talking my stuff. Listen up. That same dude, Doc, I got to tell you, Dr. Robinson, I got to tell you, this same dude, you know, I was ready to go spend some time with my wife and everything, and he didn't like how I came at him. You know, sometimes, you know, the academias, you know, those who are so bright and smart, they don't like you, you know, bottom up. Because, you know, I'd be the first to tell you, you know, I ain't cut from, you know, being all, you know, being proper. Okay, I'm probably not going to say the right thing to make you feel good. And I don't come from what they call political correctness, so I'm not going to come from that. I'm just going to bring it to you 100. You know, that's why, you know, I'm a non-commissioned officer. I never wanted to be an officer. I always wanted to be a non-commissioned officer because those non-commissioned officers in the military who mentored me, they was just raw, drill sergeant, raw. My platoon sergeant raw. So this dude's going to call me. He's going to call me, all right, to try to, you know, say that he wants to sit down with me and have a discussion and explain to me why he thinks that we don't need to be talking about, you know, slavery, and we need to just try. Brother, listen up. I just want to be, you know, I'm going to be very respectful. And I said, listen up, man. Let me explain something to you. You got me twisted, okay? You got me twisted with somebody else. You must think that I'm one of these, and I said it, you must think that I'm one of these religious nuts, okay, that you can call here and try to come at me with this nonsense and everything. You think I'm going to bow down to that nonsense. I said, let me tell you something right now, bro. I said, I'm a bottom up brother. I said, I raised my kids bottom up. I never seen a day of a classroom, okay, of any college. None of them, okay? I'm a grassroots, self-made, by the grace of God, man that can handle my business. I live here in 40th Street by choice, not because I have to, okay? I can live anywhere I want to. Got a good finances, got a lot of stuff going on. I will not allow you to come to me with that nonsense of telling me. I tell you right now, I have no reason to sit down and talk to you because you're not what we're looking for moving forward in the 21st century. You will not. I won't even give you the decency of having a conversation and sitting down, the dignity of talking with you, okay? Because you've done me, you've done the most thing that I do, we say in the military. If you want to criticize me, bro, you criticize me in private. But you don't criticize me in public, and then you want to come and not want to talk to me in private. And no, brother. I said, anytime I call your name the next time, I will. Leonard, you know me. I will bust you out in the public. No, you ain't going to talk to me in private and try to keep me shut up. No. I will bust you out. It's a time that we hold. It is time that we hold people accountable for their nonsense. And I'm done with it, Doc. I need you to help me with this, Doc, because I respect you, Dr. Robinson. I respect you, brother.
Yeah, because you about to blow a vessel.
This is what I want to say. First of all, irrespective of who's throwing mud and throwing punches, you know what your conscience and your spirit is about, so keep your eye on the prize.
Yes, sir.
The second thing the second thing I want to throw on the table. Now, spiritually, we know the greatest revolutionary was Yahshua, Jesus. Okay, so it's like 2,000 removed from when that whole movement started, right? So if it's not necessary, why does God still have preachers preaching 2,000 years after the fact? Because sin and whatever is still going on. The reason you're doing what you're doing is because the same old stuff is going on, and then the powers that be fight the powers. They want that that design. So voices like yours in the communities of oppression, voices that call for reconciliation with who we are as a people, those are good voices. So make sure that when you swing, don't swing at those naysayers. Swing at those lies so that we can bring about the truth. The final thing I want to say is that the roots, that's what holds the tree up. Before there can be leaves, there has to be the tree, but there has to be the strong roots. And what we're saying that when they cut down a tree, what's the hardest part for them to get up, Doc?
It's the root.
The roots. That's the strongest thing because it knows that the soil fed it and it kept the soil. We know that we keep America and America's trying to keep us, but we will not allow them to suppress us and oppress us. It's time for us to grow, like what Sister Queen said, with some reconciliation and knowing who we are and do right by each other.
Hey, Doc, it's an intentional thing when I sent that email to you, that text to you to get you on, because as I said, I got a lot of respect for you. You coming out to our event and you spoke and met, brother. I've not forgotten that one thing that you said, brother. You dropped. And so I value you. I look at you as my elder. Academia that has won my trust, respect, and confidence. And, you know, and those who know me knows I don't say that, you know, lightly. I don't give that praise lightly. That means you don't want my trust, my respect, and my confidence, Doc. So I want to let you know that I always want you to always know that you got a seat at the table anytime, anywhere I'm at, okay? You can be there. I want to recognize we got a millennium on the. Whenever we get a millennium on the tape on this phone calls, I always want to recognize and Tom. This brother spoke at our event as well. What's up, Mr. Thomas? Welcome to this. This is the first time you ever called into one of the Focus shows. Isn't that right?
Here lately, since y'all been doing them, but you know, back in the day, I used to jump on here too.
Oh,
that
okay.
Back in the day is like. I forget the format, but it's not my first time on one of these. I'm glad that you sent the text a little earlier today, because usually I get it too early, then I forget to jump on. But got some free time today, thought I'd jump in. What's our topic for today?
Hey, our topic is breaking free from the indoctrination of what we've been captured through, and we are 4 months out from 2019, 400 years being marked as we've been here. So from a millennium standpoint, and I really want you to get to know Queen, and you already met Leonard and everything, but drop on it, because you've been, see, I want y'all to know, I'm going to give this brother the prop. This millennium read the book. Well, you remember, you said you read America's Little Black Book when you were 16, is that right?
No, no. 21.
Okay, when you were 21.
Yeah.
21. How old are you now?
34.
He read the book when he was 21. I just learned this when he spoke. And he's been a part of this movement ever since. And it tells you, share your story, why. I want everybody to hear this. So why at 21 you got it, and you saw that it was needed, that you needed to be around. Please drop it on those who are going to be listening to this, Thomas, man. I want the millennials to know why a 21-year-old who's now 37 years old still understand that we are not niggas, we not Negroes, we not black, and we not African-American, but we are descendants of American slaves. Go ahead, talk to them, Thomas.
Okay. Just from my standpoint, I always knew that growing up here in Kentucky, I was always kind of the smart one in the class, but I was always a piece of pepper in a salt jar. So I was always concerned to how that always end up happening. I never got any real answers. So as I got older, it just kind of became the norm. But I never really stopped looking into it. And, of course, I was fed a lot of this black history. I mean, a lot of the African-American knowledge that never really hit home. And I even remember meeting a guy when I was in college. I met a dude who was really from Africa who told me about going out to kill a lion in order to come back to the village as a man. I said, well, damn, all we had to do was go out and get a girl, and we was considered the man in my little neighborhood. But, like, it just never clicked. But then when I read Mr. Shelton's book, it was actually on the humble. My mother had got the book from World Fest or something and handed it to me. She handed me a lot of books. I read not all of them, but a lot of them, but some. It was actually a white dude who, like, encouraged me at work to read it. He said, yeah, I don't do nothing anyway. I said, yeah, I might as well read a book. It's probably just some more of that black stuff. So as I opened it up, it, like, floored me from the first couple pages, and I couldn't put it down until I was done. It took about 3 days. And from that point on, I hunted down Mr. Shelton, told him I wanted to sell the book. Everybody needs to know this. I thought it was going to be the big wave. I thought by now I'd be sitting in somebody's black house. But, time still ticking. I see that the ball is rolling a little bit quicker. And so I'm still on board, but I'm still learning and still just trying to find my place and, what to do with everything. But to speed up to what y'all talking about, this whole 400 years thing, I always like kind of daydream and just be thinking about the what ifs and whatnot. So on a legislative standpoint, something like the Moses bill or something, like let my people go bill, you know, for the 400 years or something that I think a lot of the so-called African-Americans or blacks or something that everybody can rally around is that whole, because it's biblical stated at the 400 years and whatnot. So if we able to prove that documentation and say we got a Moses bill we want to pass, you know what I'm saying, that might open some doors to, because I don't know. That's just one of my brainstorms I've had. Of course, I haven't written it.
Oh, man, but speaking like a millennium, brother. Man, I like that already.
Hey, oh, yeah, I like that too myself, Doc. The Moses bill. I like that, Doc.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Let my people go.
I love that.
Hey, Leonard, did
I
just hear that?
I got a lot of people to hear about this.
Yes.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. Let my people go, Bill. Yeah, I said let my people go, Bill. I like that, Doc.
Oh, Doc.
Can you see it now? the most freeze nation.
And you know what? This speaks to the mindset of our youth. And a lot of people have discounted them, have discredited them, you know, have cast them aside and say that there's no hope for them. But, Thomas, brother, you are a breath of fresh air just to know that this has even been on your mind. And thank you for sharing that with us. And listen, I'm Sister Queen. And I'm president of the Dice Foundation. I would love to work with you to get you to be on that youth council and to motivate young people and like yourself and a little younger in the 20s and get them motivated just behind what you just said.
Yes.
So if you willing to work with me, brother, the honor would be mine.
I'm going to text in you Thomas' number right now, okay? And Thomas, Queen is my business, brother.
Well, you got to ask permission first. You got to ask some permission first. I'm asking.
Hey, listen, stay out of my business. I'm the foster. Stay out of my business, all right? I'm texting Thomas'
don't make
number
me two. Check you on this radio.
I've been knowing Thomas way longer than you. I got permission to give him your number to let him go on. And tell her, Thomas, how far we go back. We go back like that. Yeah, tell her.
Metron, I got my green light. Anytime Metron invite me somewhere, I'm there. If, you know, Metron, that's like he's we met eye to eye on this a long time ago when I don't even know if any of the same people are still around, but I know it's me trying to miss a Shelton still at it.
That's my guy. Yeah. So, hey, Thomas, mark it down, September the 2nd. You heard it here. The Moses Bill, let my people go. I expect to see. We're going to see Leonard. Can Leonard start working on Leonard? Leonard, you know, I don't like my grass growing on my feet at all. Okay, we gonna have to move on that, Thomas. I don't know why you decided to call it, but your timing was right on time, bro. I'm telling you, bro, it's right on time.
But what I would like to do, Meshawn, I would like to write that into the program on the youth services for DOS and let that be a model across the country for all of the chapters.
Yes.
That's what
now
I
you,
want to do with it.
Hey, consider, and you just said, I just text you his number. You can call him and get him on your council, and y'all start working together, okay? Because, Leonard, I mean, I don't want to speak. Leonard is the president. Leonard, do we have your blessings to move on that?
The Moses let my people go movement. You have to give it some thought because if you know your Bible, all right, the only way Pharaoh let Moses' people go was holy hell had to rain down on Egypt. All right, in order
well,
for
well, yeah, we in Egypt.
Okay, so
we already
we got we prepared to have holy hell rain down on Egypt.
Well, what have we had all this time? We've been catching hell for agendas that were not our own. So I don't mind catching hell for agendas that are ours.
No. We're not going to be the ones catching hell.
That's what I'm saying.
We're not going to be the ones catching hell. Remember, all right? Remember.
No, we giving hell.
It's what I'm saying. See, so you have to be prepared to give hell under God's blessing in order to be able to let my people go effectively. And like I said, there's plenty.
But, you know, I think for the posterity, Brother Leonard, like he says, the Moses Bill and most of the language from that to be articulated and expressed could come from across demographic between older and younger because that's a whole demographic of young people with all these new, fresh ideas which brings new blood.
Most definitely. Like I said, is we can work. I'm all about let's make it work. Let's, you know, it's out there, okay? And when I hear that, like I said, knowing Moses probably was one of the people I studied the most in the Bible. So So, like I said, is knowing what I know about Moses, okay, is yeah, okay, let my people go.
He was a bottom-up guy.
He definitely was a bottom. Well, he was born at the top, but he went to the bottom.
That's right. Right.
Remember,
That's right. He was born at the top, stolen from the taken from the river and drove into the top and decided to go back to the bottom.
Because he returned to the people.
He was actually from the bottom, right? He was actually from the bottom. He was trained at the top. He went to Harvard. Then he realized when he got to Harvard, his true calling was with the people at the bottom.
With the people at the bottom. There you go.
Hey, Thomas, look what you done done. Thomas, look what you done messed
me
around.
I just
I'm about to call you Prophet Thomas. All right? Brother Thomas, I'm about to call you Prophet.
That's just one of my ideas. Don't get me started.
There's some stages. You got some stages there. You got some stages because Moses, he had to clean his people up.
Yes. Is that what we just got through talking about?
Education. He had to clean his people up with education. He had to let some people go. Remember Moses?
Yeah.
Hey, Moses also, he told us, say, if you're with me, step forward. Okay? If you're not, stay where you are.
And that's what we saw got to do with that man named Mr. Strong or whatever his name is. It's clear that he's not with you. He's not worth the energy or the time. Just let him step back into the madness and we push him forward.
You said it, Queen. You're exactly right. You called it because I already knew. I ain't even about to go there. You ain't about to get my time. I ain't even about to get none of that. Hey, Thomas, this has been awesome.
But one thing I've learned in my last couple years of in the field that I'm in is that paper rules everything. What you got to have on that paper? Signed document. So if we're able to actually, I know it's some type of petition or some type of documentation where people are actually signing that they agree with what we stand for, that right there separates those from the rest. You know what I mean? So if you game enough to at least read it and then sign it, that's your commitment to the cause. And then we go forward with all this paperwork.
We need to put together a petition. You know what, Ms. Queen, you and Tommy need to get together. You need to put the petition together, and we need to say, hey, Leonard, you know I'm not about letting no grass grow on my feet. We need to, I can tell, and even getting Dr. Robinson on this, we need to go ahead and put it on paper, put it in a petition, and we need to start between now and 2019 getting people signing the petition for the Moses Bill. Let my people go.
Well, I'll work with Thomas on creating and writing that bill. It would be my honor to do that with him. And like I say, and use that as a model throughout the country for our youth to get involved in this process and know that that includes education as well as a movement. And we're going to educate while we move. Yeah, we're going to educate while we move so that young people know what they're getting into and so that they can reach back or reach forward or reach to the side and reach one and teach one. That's the goal.
And I want to make sure, even though it's only us on this line, but I'm all about transcending. This is not about one of the biggest things that I believe that hurt us culturally. And I want to see if Dr. Robinson, as we are getting close to the end, would agree with this and understand is what are the things that I believe that hurt us culturally is that, and I grew up, I'm born in the 60s, grew up during the 70s, is that when Martin Luther King and Malcolm X was assassinated, we took on the spirit of revengefulness. And we will believe that we took on the spirit of, because we had a movement. There was things going on, but then, our two great, articulate alpha men were slain. But the people that was left behind took on a spirit of revengefulness, and we started saying we're black and we're proud, and we started taking on the another spirit. I just want to make sure that the movement that we're involved in, whatever we do, okay, we you're doing what Martin Luther King specifically was working. He said when we look for what's good for the most, we do what's good for the least, okay? And so whatever we're doing, okay, even with this Moses bill, what's good for the least of us will be good for the rest of America and society as a whole. Now, Dr. Robinson, do you feel where I'm going with this? Because I don't want us to get caught up in this mentality like, you know, we paying back somebody. See, revenge is not in our hands. Revenge is in God's hands. You know, what we're doing is need to be students of carrying out God's will and letting God's will be carried out, but not do it in such a way that we looking like now it's us against them. It's I don't think that's the spirit that I want to be part of. I want to say that we represent God in all that we're doing, that we lifting up not just us, but them as well, and making them reconcile for even the wrongs that their ancestors has done in the 21st century. And I'd like to hear your speak to that, Dr. Robinson.
Okay, I think what has been said is not us against them. I do believe if we keep the spirit of God in front of us, it goes back to what Brother Leonard said, Moses opened up a whole new door, opened it up. And that door was a door of liberation. Liberation is going to open up not only it's going to be us, but it's going to open up the door for other oppressed peoples in this country. Got other groups that are oppressed, but they don't voice it like we voice it. But we voice it from the soul of our experience from 1619 all the way back, this slavery thing. So we want to be inclusive, but truth will also be inclusive. Once we stand up and speak up and, you know, put it out there, other people will be able to see courage, come on board. Not from a perspective of let's get revenge, but let's build a better people. Let's build a better nation.
Making America greater than it's ever been.
Bottom line, we are strong roots. We know what it takes. It's built on our back anyway. So
as we close out,
them on my back, then they can build truth on our experience.
Yes. As we're closing out here, I want Thomas, I want you to close this out and be the last to say something as we're closing out, because I want to go ahead and close out and everything. It's 7:22, and I want us to go and get it all in. So Thomas, you be the last. And Doc, you start us out, and then Queen, you jump in, and then Leonard. So start us off, Doc. Dr. Robinson.
I think
your last words, what you want everybody to know for your last words on this show.
I think the Moses bill would bring power to the people who are suffering and people who need a brighter light and hope.
Power. Queen.
Well, I have to stand on the fact of each one has to reach one in order to teach one. And as far as the economics in this country, let us not be disillusioned with the idea or with the desire to bring about atonement and reconciliation. That is an ideal perspective, but it's not necessarily a realistic one when you talk about economics. When you're talking about the economics that Dr. Martin Luther King was talking about, in his own words, we have to redistribute the pain, because still in 2018, economically, we have been taken advantage of. We've been taken advantage of politically, when they look for the black vote, so to speak. So we cannot close our eyes to the realities that still exist today, and they know that they are the benefactors of our ancestors, and they have not stepped forward to atone and reconcile with us. So in order for us to come up as a people, we're going to have to redistribute that pain and take control of our finances through education and self-efficiency.
Well said, Ms. Queen. Leonard, go ahead.
Okay.
Leonard?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? Okay, you guys can hear me.
Yeah, I hear you.
I believe the that's in the theme of Moses, okay? One of the things that, you know, people would say is that God did it. Okay, God did these things for people to liberate his people. That's true. God did it. But the thing that I want to emphasize is that God has already did it. We already have the power, okay? We've already been endowed with greatness. We have to actualize what is already in us. We have to go forward, all right, and pray about our mission, our journey, okay? Show us what's in us already. Show us the things that we don't know about ourselves. Give us the courage, okay? Because that's what it took. All right, it took for those miracles to happen. All right, now we don't give Moses the credit, all right, for parting the Red Sea. Give God the credit. But Moses was the instrument because Moses believed. Moses said, my people have to get across this water, okay, and they can't swim across the water, and we don't have boats, okay. So Moses actuated, all right. He actuated the God within him, all right, because he believed. And he understood he had a God on his side doing these things, okay? The work of liberating our people, okay, is God's work. Let that not ever be, not ever understood. It is God's work that we should be liberated, all right? Now, another thing is that we must actively be a part of our own liberation. Everybody. Everyone has to play a part. Everybody has to be actively. I mean, it's not going to happen. Hey, what if great Gil Scott Heron? The revolution will not be televised. Okay? That means you're not going to watch. You have to be a part of it. If you want to reap the results and reap the rewards and be liberated, you have to be your own liberator. That means you got to change some things about yourself. All right, you got to look at some things differently. Okay, you got to say, how's this education going to help me? Okay, it's going to help you because it's going to help you liberate. There are some things about you right now, okay, that's no good. It's holding you back. It's holding you down. And you can say, is this person that person? But you have the power to let these things go. You have the power to change it. And this is the thing that we have to infuse in our people. Say, listen. God has already given it to you. Understand something. It said when God created man, that God breathed the life of breath into man, and he became a living being. Okay? When all of those measures of God come together, see, that's, we have a measure of God with this. When all these measures of God come together, we start to exponentially increase the power of God as we come together with one purpose. The Moses bill, okay? One purpose, liberation, liberating ourselves. Let my people go. But first, we got to let some things go, all right? We have to let some things go. Just like the Israelites in Goshen, they had to let go of Egypt and trust God and go to a land that was meant for them. They had to let go. Okay, first, before God could, okay, since you've let go of this, now I'm going to go ahead and clear the path for you. All right?
All right.
We're already in it.
All right. Thomas, you got 60 seconds. Thomas, is yours.
Okay. Liberation, I love that word. One of my favorite songs by Outkast called Liberation. Now, wasn't really expecting this. I kind of been dealing with these thoughts in my head. So talking to a group of people and getting all these different perspectives, I love it. I just, like I said, Mitron has my number. I love to talk this talk 24/7, but usually I be at work and a lot of people around me don't talk this talk. So I just wish everybody a good weekend, a good holiday, and get in touch with me because I'm about ready to explode mentally because of the different worlds I go between trying to handle this knowledge and you and still be normal in this society. So I'm considered crazy. Sometimes I feel like I'm crazy, but I just happy I kind of let these thoughts loose. I rarely do. I'm glad I was able to talk to y'all. I see my seconds is counting down. I wish everybody a good rest of the day, and I hope I was able to bring some good light to your day.
Hey, Thomas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to leave with this here as we are on overtime, that we are in a good place in everything. And it's time for us to realize that it's harvesting the world is what we're all about. Until next week, we'll be back at same place, same time, the Focus Show. I love y'all. Y'all take care now.